Thank you for joining us today for a message from the Word of God. What follows is a recording from one of our live services at Gooch Lane Church of Christ in Huntsville, Alabama. If you're ever in the area, we'd love to have you join us in person. And if you like what you hear today, you can visit us online at teachingtruth.org, where we have videos, weekly articles on biblical topics, information about our services, and more.
Well, good evening. Boy, this weekend has gone quickly. Can't believe we're in our last lesson together, but I am so glad that you all are here. And if your parents and your kids have already grown up, think about your grandchildren. Think about your great-grandchildren. You can still have a huge impact on those around you. I call this creative parenting, thinking out of the box. Speaking of grandchildren, those are my six right there. And one of the reasons we are leaving our congregation that we love so much and hesitate to leave is because we've had five of our six grandchildren born while we were up in the Kirkland Church of Christ. And we've been just far away from them. A three-hour time frame with the time frame difference has been hard. And so one of my goals in the future is to focus on discipling those grandchildren. My folks were really helpful in helping disciple my kids, Amy and Allison, and I want to now do the same for my children. And we look forward to that. And with all that is going on in this crazy and turbulent world, we need to really be, you know, on our toes about what are ways that we can overcome a lot of the negativity around us and really take advantage of the wonderful blessing of children and grandchildren. The Bible says in Psalm 127, verse 3 and 4, that children are a heritage from the Lord, and blessed is the man whose quiver is full of them. That would be basically five children for a full quiver. So the Bible constantly refers to children as one of life's greatest blessings. But raising up children for the next generation, though it's extremely important to successfully pass on the baton of faith, obviously there are frustrating moments, there are ups and downs. And I think there are probably times when you even doubt yourself a little bit, because when you're a parent, you've never done it before, right? And they don't come with an instruction manual, at least a detailed instruction manual. And I was a little frustrated when I, as a young father, was studying the scriptures that there wasn't more detailed information about parenting. You have to remember that the Bible is meant for all times and all cultures. And so we're just given these general principles and not really a lot of specifics. And part of that also, I think, is because different children have different personalities, and what may work for one will not work for another. But the Bible principles we have are never outdated because they are eternal and forever settled in the heavens. Another thing I think about a lot is that one of the signs of the Messianic age in the very last book of the Old Testament, as you close the Old Testament and you're waiting for the opening of the New about 400 years later, is a prophecy in Malachi 4 and verse 6 that one of the signs that the Messiah has come is that the hearts of the fathers will be turned to the children. And I think that's a fascinating sign of the coming kingdom we don't think about very much. And it's not just the hearts of the children return, of the fathers return to their children, but to children, the children. And so that reminds me that all of us as Christians and in a local family ought to be concerned about all the children here at Gooch Lane. And we all need each other's help to raise godly children and to encourage one another. And we do that in part by having a bunch of people rotate to teach the younger kids. And by the way, I hope you don't just leave that up to the women to do. I was pleased to see that Brent and Becky teach together, I think, the fourth grade. They were talking about how much they enjoy that. Well, my dad was a shepherd for so many years. He would often want to teach the little kids to stay in touch, even when he had to get down on the ground with them and sometimes had a hard time getting back up. But we all need to be concerned about each other's spirituality and help raise the next generation of Christian warriors. And it's so sad what happens when you don't pass on the baton of faith successfully, and then the ripple effect that that has for generations to come. So I want you to think about not only what you can do with your own children and grandchildren, but what you can do to create bonds with all the children around you. They're a blessing, and they need role models and people that can influence them. The Timberlake family are visiting tonight. We spent, 8.5 years together at Kirkland, and I watched them give birth to Rosie and to Ruby, and just developed such a close relationship with those two girls, and it's special to me and special to them, and we just all need to think about that. So kind of have a broad-based approach when you discuss these types of subjects. Okay, a lot of times when we talk about parenting, we automatically think about discipline and chastening and admonition. I think of Proverbs 29:15, the rod and reproof give wisdom, but a child left to himself shall grow up to bring shame to his mother. And of course, we understand what happens when you don't actively engage in trying to mold and shape the hearts of the children around you. And certainly, corporal punishment, the rod, and reproof, instruction as to why this punishment is happening, is all a part of raising kids. Deuteronomy 6 talks about, teaching them as you rise up in the morning and as you walk along the way, and, just constantly have this as an opportunity for teaching moments. But what I don't think we think about very much, and where I want the focus for tonight's class to be on, is on nurturing your children, creating strong emotional bonds. I mean, we have children in part because we want to share our love and we want to have a close-knit family. Ephesians 6 and verse 4 says, nurture them in the chastening and admonition of the Lord. And so there's my current extended family, my two daughters and their husbands and their three kids apiece. And what we want to do is figure out how we can nurture close relationships. Kind of been hard being so far away, like I said, but it's God's command here that we try to nurture those relationships. The word nurture literally means warming. Think of being in a home and it's cold out and you put your hands up to the warm fire and you kind of keep them warm and nurture your body. In a similar way, we kind of warm the hearts of our family and keep the family close-knit. And so I thought a long time ago, actually most of these thoughts probably about 30 years old, but I think they still apply. And the first thing I want to talk about is the importance of names in parenting children. The Romans had a saying in Latin, nomen est omen, which meant names are destiny. And they spent a lot of time thinking about what are we going to name our children, because they felt like they would live up to their name. And if you've noticed in your Bible, there's just a whole lot of references to names, and then you look in the margin as to what they mean. And they're there for a reason. I know in our Western culture, names are not really thought about very much, and people often don't ponder very much what they're going to name their kids. That is a huge mistake. Because your children are going to be interested in why you named them what you did. I have a relative of ours, and they had a child, and they named him Statham. And we said, oh, Statham, I haven't heard of that name before. And they said, well, we had never either heard it before as a first name, but we like Jason Statham, the action-adventure star. And so we named him after Jason Statham, who's, you know, famous in the movies, and they liked his movies. I don't know, that doesn't seem like something that the kid's going to grow up and think, oh, I was named after Jason Statham. Big deal. I mean, hopefully as Christians, we're going to think about something that has a lot more spiritual benefit. And so you're going to find that names are important to God as well as the Romans. How do you know names are important to God? Ephesians 3, verse 15 says, everything on heaven and on earth is fitly named by God, right? I mean, I want to be a part of a church that gives Christ glory, the church of Christ. I don't want to be a part of a church named after John the Baptist. I mean, does it matter what you name something? Of course it does. Adam's first responsibility after the animals came to him is God says, okay, name the animals. That must have been a fun endeavor. Wonder how Adam came up with hippopotamus, huh? Oh, that looks like a hippopotamus. Anyway, he was told, this is your responsibility to take care of the garden and to name these animals. And the naming feature showed that he was to have dominion over the animal kingdom. And parents, I think, have a unique responsibility in naming their children. And it ought not to be something that is just done flippantly without a whole lot of thought. At the giving of the Abrahamic covenant, God took the name of Abram, which was exalted father, and he says, as of now, because of this covenant I've entered into, I'm changing your name to Abraham, exalted father of many nations. And your wife means princess, and she's going to be exalted princess of many nations, to indicate the importance of the Abrahamic covenant and their future with their descendants. So God really has a lot to say in the Bible about names. There are 7 births in the Bible that are named in advance by angels. And they're usually told specifically why you're supposed to name them this, because of their unique purpose in God's plan. Most of you are familiar with Luke chapter 1, where Zechariah and Elizabeth, they didn't have any children of their own because they were an older couple and Elizabeth had been barren. And really, miraculously, she's past the manner of woman, it appears. And God enables her to have a child to show the special miracle that's involved in this child's birth. And normally you would name this child after the father. In the culture, you would want to have a son that would be your junior. And God says, no, you don't name him after yourself. I want you to name him John. Well, that's a big deal because he's supposed to, what's his purpose in God's plan? He's to prepare the way for the coming kingdom, right? And so Jesus, John chapter 1, you know, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word became God, and the Word became flesh and dwelt among us, and we beheld his glory. He came with truth and grace. And so the gospel, which is about grace, was first pronounced by John the Baptist, whose very name meant grace. And that was a part of God's plan. Beloved, names mean something. The church in Philadelphia, he that overcometh will I make a pillar in the temple of my God, and he shall go no more out, and I will write upon him the name of my God and the name of the city of God, which is the new Jerusalem, and I will write upon him my new name. So apparently when we get to heaven, Part of what God's going to do, kind of put his stamp upon us, is he's going to give us a new identity, a new eternal spiritual body, and a new name. Think names matter to God? Yes, the question is, do they matter to you? And you young people who maybe haven't had children yet, or maybe not even married, I want you to understand how important this role is in parenting. Some of my personal favorites, if I had a son, my wife was scared to death that I'd want to name him Hezekiah. She said, I don't want a son named Hezi. No, thank you. And I just love the story of Hezekiah and how through his personal strength and determination and his complete trusting in God, you wake up in the morning and this God sends this angel and 185,000 Assyrian soldiers lay dead. And Sennacherib, the next morning, just says, departed. I think I'd depart too when my army's gone, right? I mean, he lived up to his name. Jehovah was his strength. In fact, there are times where I'm kind of struggling with something, and I just say to myself, Hezekiah, 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 Hezekiah. Jehovah is my strength. I can do this with God's help. And Timothy, that was another thought I had if I'd had a son. Timothy means devoted to God. And he was. Of course, he was Paul's protege. And if I had a son, I would have said, now we named you Timothy because we want you to be devoted to God. And God has a special purpose for you in his plan, and we know that. And so every time we call your name, I want you to remember its purpose and meaning. I'm telling you, that's a great way to shape a child's self-esteem and to help them remember how important it is. I also like the name Samuel, which means answered prayer. Sometimes a waiter will come and I'll see their name is Samuel and I'll say, hey, do you know that you're an answered prayer? And they go, what? I go, yeah, your very name, Samuel, means answered prayer. I'm amazed how many people don't even know that. And I tell them that, they go, really? That's pretty cool, you know. Spent their whole life up to 25 years old, don't even know what their name means. That's really sad. Because names matter. Do you know what your name means? Have you given it much thought? If not, it's never too late. Parents need to use this as a part of building self-esteem and purpose. My firstborn was a little girl. There's a picture of her shortly after her birth. Her name is Amy. The word Amy means beloved, means loved one. And every time we called her name, I wanted her to remember how she was loved by God and loved by us and how lovable she was. And even as a little kid, I'd say, now, Amy, what does your name mean? And she'd go, loved one. I go, that's absolutely right. And she loves her name because it's short and it's a reminder of how loved she is. I think that's important to someone's self-esteem. I do. And then when Allison came along, a couple years later, there's a picture of little Allison being held by Amy. Gail and I decided, let's call her Allison, so we got the two A's, because Allison means honest one. And that's what we want for both of our girls more than anything, is for them to have good and honest hearts. And so occasionally when she was young, you know, a little kid will try little things. We caught her telling a tall tale. So I just sat her down and I said, now, Allison, what does your name mean? She'd go, honest one. I said, was that honest what you just said? Allison, was that honest? I said, Allison, you're not even living up to your name. What are you doing? Don't you know that lying is an abomination unto Jehovah, but those who deal truthfully are his delight? Now, come on, you can do better than that. And we said a prayer together and all that. And over the years, Allison was known by everyone as someone that was just meticulously honest. She went to the Florida College Academy, and something happened where somebody accused her of telling an untruth of some sort. No, this is what it was. She was accused of cheating. And Allison was just so incensed. She said, No, I don't cheat. I'm an honest person. My very name means honest. I'm not the culprit. And sure enough, she wasn't the culprit, and they apologized to her. And all her peers, when Allison's name came up, said it wouldn't be Allison. Her name means honest. She wouldn't cheat. And so it had a huge impact on her being really careful, especially about honesty and having a good and tender, open, honest heart. Now, you can name them after Bible characters, and a lot of people do, like David means Messiah's love, and you can focus in on the giant killer aspect about how courageous David was and how he was a man after God's own heart. Kind of downplay the incident with David and Bathsheba if I were you. But you can talk about how these are the aspects of this Bible character that you like, and this is why you name them after this man after God's own heart. So, you may be wondering, well, what does Brent mean? It means rising above obstacles. Brent Romine and I were talking about that recently and how helpful that is when you're kind of feeling overwhelmed or whatever. You can overcome obstacles. Brent's known as a problem solver. He's rising above obstacles to get results. So, it's never too late to benefit. Take the names of the local congregation and publish their meetings. Sometimes in local congregations, we've had the bulletin or the directory, and we look up the spiritual meaning of their names, and it becomes a conversation piece among us, and it can really make for special relationships. Tell children in the Bible class the spiritual significance of their name will have lasting impact, because a good name is more to be desired than great riches. Okay. There's a book called The Name Book, The Character Building Value in Understanding Its Meaning. And you can get one for a few bucks on Amazon. It's been around for many years. In the prologue of the book, it says, each name carries its own message, its own gift. Discover its heritage, significance, and spiritual application. And so I recommend that book to you. And if you haven't named your children yet, if you're really young, really give it some serious thought and make sure you talk to your child as they grow up about their name and its significance. Your kids will really like that. Another thing that I think is really important about instilling values is the family dinner hour. You know, I think you need to just about do everything you can to make the family dinner hour sacred. Look at it this way. What does disfellowshipping someone involve? What are we told in 1 Corinthians 5 when you were going to withdraw fellowship from this brother who was engaged in a terribly immoral sin? What are the people told to do? Don't what? Yeah, don't eat with that person. The reason is because, you know, God knows and research shows that eating together provides more than nourishment. Eating together creates kind of a bonding that helps the family communicate and feel close. Because when you eat a meal together, you talk, right? You don't eat a meal together in silence and just focus on the meal. You know, you share that special relationship together. The Arabic culture has a saying that those with whom you share a meal, you become fast friends. And I think there's a lot of truth in that. When you have someone in your home and you sit them around the table and you share a meal together, there's just a closeness you have afterwards. It's one of the reasons why we're told to be hospitable. It's an important part of Christian fellowship. And when you say, I love you, but until you change this behavior, I cannot extend to you this kind of right arm of fellowship and act like everything's the same, because it's not until you repent. And there's a reason why we're told not to eat. The process of eating together creates emotional bonds, and when you sever that, the other person misses it, and it becomes a motivation for them to return to the Lord. When I was single, I was very busy and active. I wasn't particularly in some hurry to get married. But there were times as a single fella in my apartment, I would fix up a little something for myself. And I would find myself sitting there eating alone. And it just kind of felt empty. And I said, you know, to myself, that I need a companion. Partially because I didn't want to eat alone. My wife is so sweet, she knows I feel that way. And so even if she's sick or whatever and not able to eat, she will come down and sit with me when we're having a meal together. Because it's just an important time. Often the only time we're all together as a family and really share is around the dinner table. There's a website that talks about this, takebackthetable.org. It's got some great pointers and some suggestions about things you can do around the table. It's so sad how many people will rush in and rush out and throw something in the microwave. And so, you know, you've taken care of your physical hunger, but you've neglected this wonderful opportunity to really communicate together. In fact, I want you to notice what this sociological study found. The more often a child eats dinner with his or her family, the less likely that child is to smoke, drink, or use drugs. Frequent family dining is correlated with doing well in school and develop healthy eating habits. This pattern holds true regardless of a child's gender, family structure, or socioeconomic level. It's also a typical distinction between a child that's into drugs, they typically are from broken homes where they don't eat together, and children that choose not to do drugs, and they've got a cohesive unit at home that gives them a sense of strength. One survey examining National Merit Scholars was looking for common denominators in their upbringing. This is like the top 2% of the children academically that score high on like SATs and that kind of thing. And you know what they found? They found that almost without exception, the most astounding teenagers grew up in homes where the whole family sat down and ate dinner together at night. That's from the Ladies' Home Journal. And what they found was, is that the parents from a very young age, and it didn't have to be both parents, it could be a single parent doing this, they would eat together, and while they're eating, they would talk about the importance of their studies and a good education. And they would instill in their children the value of that. And that was true with almost every National Merit Scholar that was studied. Now, I think that's fine. I've been an educator most of my life. I think that's good to focus on learning and getting a good education. But what's even more important? How about loving God and maintaining a good faith and your walk with the Lord? And I was fortunate to be raised in a home where 6 o'clock was dinner hour and we were all expected to be there. And my dad, who was a pediatric dentist, would come home from his office right at 6, and we'd all be waiting for him to come. And he'd greet us as he would come in, and then he'd sit down at the head of the table, because he's the head of the house, and he'd say, before we say our prayer, what's going on in your life, and what can I pray for you about? So the prayer wasn't just quick prayer for the food. It was specific things that were going on in our lives, and we'd think about it and then ask Dad to pray with us and for us around the dinner table. And then after we got done eating, frequently we'd sit there for the longest time. I had 3 sisters that were rather vociferous, and so I would have to raise my hand and kind of hope I'd get called on. My wife says that, you know, I preach because I'm trying to make up for lost time when I didn't get a chance to hardly get a word in edgewise because of my sisters being so loquacious. But anyway, the point is that, you know, a lot of times people say, you quote your dad a lot. Why is that? Most of the things I quote are things I remember being told as a kid around the dinner table. He would talk about God and country. He's very patriotic. He was very concerned about our country. And mostly, though, he was concerned about God. And he instilled faith in all of us. Let me challenge something to all of you. Our Catholic friends love to say, give me a child until he or she is 5 years old, and he will be a Catholic the rest of his life. Do we say that in the church? Are we confident that the things we do with our children when they're really young is going to be so impactful that we're going to instill in them faith that they will hold on until death do them part? I don't hear that hardly at all. We say our children should go to Bible class. But most of what I remember is not from the Bible classes. It's from what I was taught at home around the dinner table. And the prayers that were said for me around the dinner table. And so guess what? I told my wife, Gail, we're going to make this family dinner hour sacred. And I explained to her why. And she goes, yeah, let's do it. And so sometimes they've had sporting events and we'd wait to eat till 8 or 8:30 so we could all be together as a family. Because that was always a top priority. And make sure that you look for opportunities to have some devotional time and talk to your children about what really matters. I mean, who cares if they become a National Merit Scholar and lose their soul? So talk about the things that will help them realize the most important thing is going to heaven. My parents would constantly say, listen, I don't care what kind of successes you may have in life. If you don't make it to heaven, if our whole family isn't able to be reunited together in heaven one day, it was all for naught. Those kind of things make a huge difference in a person's life. Any of you watched the series Blue Bloods? It's on CBS. It's actually a pretty good series. It's been around for 10 years. Tom Selleck is the star. And Mr. Selleck said that he wouldn't star in this particular series about New York City police officers, that's why they call it Blue Bloods, unless every episode they could have a focus and usually the ending discussion around them eating dinner together as a family. So every Sunday afternoon they have dinner and they focus on these discussions around the dinner table. And it's one of the reasons this is one of the most popular shows ever. It's because a lot of people don't have that. And they resonate with the value of talking about things that really matter around the dinner table. And they do. They talk about moral issues and, you know, what have you failed on in the last week or so? What did you learn from your failure? You don't learn from your successes. You learn from your failures. That was discussion in the last episode that my wife and I watched. And it's a clean show, highly recommended, focused around tying everything together at the end around the dinner table. Another thing that I would recommend that you'll find helpful is to have family memory verses. Before we said our prayer, we would say either our family motto, which I'll talk about in a minute, or we would say our family memory verse. My wife was the one who spearheaded this. She would keep them on 3x5 cards with a rubber band around them, and they would be at the center of our dinner table. And one of the things we would talk about is, what verses did you hear this week in your reading or in your Bible study, in your classes, that resonated with you? Maybe we ought to add that to our memory verses. Remember, Psalm 119, verse 11 talks about that you treasure the word of God up in your heart, that you may not sin against God. I don't know why, but we've kind of gotten away from memorization. And we especially love to memorize Proverbs because they're easy to remember and they're very poignant. And I asked my girls recently, what's your favorite memory verse? They're in their late 30s. And immediately, Allison said, grace is deceitful, and beauty is vain. The woman who fears Jehovah, she shall be praised. And I asked Amy, you know, what's your favorite memory verse? And really interesting, she treasures the memory verse we taught her after we caught her bragging. She was doing a Nintendo game. I said, Amy, you're really good at that. And she goes, thanks, Dad, I know. So I told Gail, we need to find a proverb about this. And so there's a proverb that says, let another man's lips praise thee, not thine own mouth. Someone else, not you. And so I said, you need to memorize that, Amy. When someone compliments you, don't say, yeah, you're right, I'm great. Don't do that. Say, thank you, that's kind of you to say. And so that was her favorite memory verse, remembering that from her childhood and teaching her that principle. Are you taking advantage of teachable moments to help treasure in people's, your young children's heart, these key verses? The gift that I brought the Romines for letting me stay in their gracious home this weekend is the Daily Bread Box. And we found one of these when our kids were teenagers. Wish we had it earlier. But we have it centered around our table, and we have people over all the time. And we will say, man cannot live by bread alone, but by every word, right, that proceedeth out of the mouth of Jehovah. So this is like a spiritual appetizer. And we'll pass this out, and it has 240 Bible promises on them. And then we'll go around and we'll have them read which side of it they particularly like the best and maybe tell us why they like that Bible promise. And it's just what we do to start our meal when we have families over. And we do it during the week as well with our own kids when they were teenagers. So I hope the Romine family will enjoy that. It's a nice little tradition. And people come over. And if we've had them over before, they go, are we going to have our spiritual appetizer? And I go, absolutely. So these are traditions that make a difference. Find verses that meet current needs. One of our favorite verses is Isaiah 41 and verse 10. Fear thou not, for I am with thee. Be not dismayed, for I am thy God. I will strengthen thee. I will help thee. I will uphold thee with thy right arm of righteousness. Now, one of the reasons we really like that verse is because Tampa is notorious for lightning storms and the power going out. Not looking forward to that. But at any rate, so it was one of these lightning storms and the power was out. And Allison was taking a bath. She's a little girl. And somehow or other, the bathroom door got locked. And it's one of those doors that has a little, you know, kind of a pin key. And you usually keep it up on the top part of the door there. And so that was missing, and we went to try to open up the door, and Allison was kind of afraid, and she was kind of getting, you know, concerned. Let me in, you know, mom and dad, you know, that kind of thing. And then all of a sudden, she got real quiet. And I'll never forget this, because Gail goes, Brent, she's not saying anything anymore. What if she's drowned in there or something? I go, Gail, it's a bathtub. She's going to be okay. I go, shh, let's listen. She's saying something. And we heard Allison saying, while she was waiting for us, fear thou not, for I am with thee. Be not dismayed, for I am thy God. I will strengthen thee. I will help thee. I will uphold thee with thy right arm of righteousness. Fear thou not, for I am with thee. She kept on saying it faster and faster. We finally got to her. But we always kind of smile and remember that moment. And here she had this verse memorized, and so she brought it back up when she was afraid, and it calmed her down in a moment when she was kind of freaking out. You know, sometimes your kids teach you things. You try to teach them, but do we do that as adults? Do we lay up these words of God in our heart and then have it available when we need it and use it? I hope so. Because this is, I think, a part of good parenting. Sometimes we'd read an article out of the paper. Gail would typically cut out things that we thought would be good to talk about, and we'd kind of process the material and guide their thinking. Our favorite saying as a family is just entitled, watch. Maybe you've heard this. Watch your thoughts, they become your words. Watch your words, they become your actions. Watch your actions, they become your habits. Watch your habits, they become your character. And Amy, I remember, just laid that up. Kids can memorize stuff real quick. And then she would rattle that off. And she asked one time, she said, do you think we can go to this particular movie? And I said, I don't know, Amy. Let's look at what screenit.com says. And it had a certain number of words that were a problem. And at any rate, she said, well, what difference is the fact that it has a few cuss words in it? You know, we don't cuss. And I said, you know the answer to that. What do you do first? You watch your thoughts, right? She would go, oh. And so she decided on her own that wouldn't be a good thing to expose herself to because of that basic principle from Watch. Okay, let's talk about family motto or mission statement. It began to dawn on me that these businesses typically have these mottos that they use for advertising, like GM, the mark of excellence, and Hallmark cards, he cared enough to send the very best. And I thought, why not have a family motto for the Hunters? Because what you will someday be, you will now be coming. And so this wouldn't be something that indicates necessarily what we are, but it's what we strive to be. And we can kind of hold each other accountable. What the flag is to our country, this motto would be for our family. And so I think it was like Amy was 7 and Allison was 5, something like that. And I said, I want your girls to participate in this. Let's put together a family motto. And so they all wrote adjectives down that indicated things that would say that as a godly family, this is what we want to be. Well, this is very simple. The girls were very young. We are a loving, affectionate, responsible, obedient, cheerful, godly family. We always do our best and finish what we start. And the thing that was nice about this is that, you know, I remember one time I was not in the greatest of mood. And Amy says, Dad, we're a loving, affectionate, responsible, obedient, cheerful, godly family. You're not being cheerful. I say, okay, thanks for the reminder, Amy. That's a good girl. And one time, Amy really didn't want to give me a hug. And I said, we're a loving, affectionate, cheerful, godly family. So come over here and give Dad a hug. And we just kind of used it all the time. And sometimes before we'd eat, we'd say our motto. And sometimes we would say one of our family memory verses. I got a kick out of Amy going over one of the first times she spent the night over at a neighbor's house. And she's sitting around the table at their house. And she goes, you guys going to say your family motto? And they go, what? She goes, you don't have a family motto? And they go, no, what's that? And so she told them about our family motto. And she goes, Dad, how come other people don't have family mottos? I said, because they just don't know about this or haven't thought about it. But we don't want to be an average family. We want to have special things that create the right kind of bonds and values. And so, years ago, I told my friend Ralph Walker, that many of you probably know, about this. And he said, that's a good idea, Brent. I'm going to come up with my own. He called it a family creed, which is fine. He said, we are the walkers. We walk in paths of righteousness. We are a family of loving, supportive people, and our goal is to help each other be our best. We focus on whatever is true, honorable, right, pure, lovely, and of good reputation. We strive for excellence in being worthy of praise, but we are the walkers, and walker women don't wear brown. So Ralph has 3 daughters, and they don't look good in brown. So they put that in their family creed. Leave it up to Ralph to have a funny twist at the end. But this means a lot to their family, and I talked to their daughters about it, and then they have come up with their own family creeds with their families. And it's kind of a creative way to have something special. Joel and Kate Wilsford's family, Joel and I were classmates. He said, my mission is to love, care for, support each other, making our home a refuge from the world, enjoy life and all its blessings, do for others, giving ourselves to God forever. And then their family signed it, and Jeannie was in my marriage and family class at Florida College, and she read this to the class and said she'd framed this and put it in her dorm room, and it helped her not to be homesick. I thought that was pretty cool. This is a family from Missoula, Montana, the Huber family. We are the holy, humorous, happy, helpful, honest, heroic Hubers. Talk about alliteration. And years ago, I presented this idea to the Kraft family. And Gary and Debbie, I think mostly Debbie, came up with this, which I thought was really cool. We are a compassionate, cheerful, crazy, conscientious, come-on-over Christian family. We cherish the name and sacrifice of Christ, the truth of His holy word, and each other. And sometimes we're cat-loving, cinema-viewing, chicken-eating, chocolate-loving, couch potatoes. Well, that was honest of them. I have to say, that was one of the most creative family mottos. Thank you, Debbie. Good job. All right. Why not take some time and come up with a family motto, creed, or mission statement of your own? Most people don't have these. But wouldn't it be great if, as a culture of Gooch Lane, you go into the people's homes here, and most people do have them? because it is a part of the culture. Family traditions have the idea of building close bonds. The word tradition just means to hand down. And good traditions can become cherished memories which show forethought and concern. They have a twofold purpose. They create anticipation and meaningful reflection later, and they cement relationships that create lifelong bonds of closeness. You need to do things in your family that become some unique traditions. And I think every family needs to have them. God certainly had a lot of traditions in the Bible that he passed on down, and he wanted through the Passover and its regular celebration to remember their birth as a nation. And in the New Testament, we have the tradition weekly of the Lord's Supper. And it has the same purpose of cohesively keeping the church family close. So, a couple of quick examples, and then we'll be concluded for today. Just the idea of saying our family mottos and family memory verses became cherished traditions for my family. And something I highly recommend that you do is to celebrate spiritual birthdays and exalt them at least as important or more important than physical birthdays. So we make a big deal about giving our new converts a baptismal certificate where they can remember this, it's suitable for framing, they can write the date, and on the back they can reflect upon what they did and why. My daughter Amy, her spiritual birthday just happened, 9/9/95, and Allison is 10/25/97. And so we will wish them a happy spiritual birthday. You've been a Christian for 1 year, 2 years, 5 years, 10 years, whatever. And I remember saying, okay, you've been a Christian for a year now, Amy. How have you grown? How do you think you're doing? Allison, you've been a Christian for 2 years now. Let's talk about that. What does that mean to you? But the most important date is when you're born again of the water and the Spirit, more important than your first birthday when you were born physically, because this is when you made the choice to turn your life over to God. So my wife has a little charm bracelet. She's got little sketches of both of our daughters, and she has their spiritual birthdays on the back of her little charm bracelet. So, do we celebrate spiritual birthdays? Do we even remember what date we became a Christian? March 16th, 1965. Boy, I really date myself. But I will never forget that day. And you shouldn't either. And as a parent, you ought to point this out to your children and put it on your calendar and make a big deal out of this. I usually give my daughter some sort of birthday, spiritual birthday present that's going to help them spiritually. So that's a great tradition, and I highly recommend it to you. We regularly would, after dinner sometimes, go for a family walk together. And the value of that is, what's Moses say in Deuteronomy 6? Talk to your children while you walk along the way. And again, when you walk together, you talk together. Some of our neighborhood kids used to join us and say, can we join you on your family walk? And we'd say, sure. And it was something the whole neighborhood knew about. Friday night was family night. We tried to take that off so we could spend the time with the kids. And one of the things I enjoyed as the dad a lot was every night I would try to make sure I was there before they went to bed and tuck them in and pray with them. And my daughter Allison, I went ahead and continued to do this until 11th grade. And we just had such great little discussions, and I would pray for her, and she would pray for me, and we had such a close relationship. And the thing I miss most about the kids being gone in the empty nest is not having that time to pray with them. Dads, the mom is with the kids during the day most of the time. They spend more time with their mother, but this is a time I think you ought to say, let this be dad and son or dad and daughter time. And it only took 5 minutes or so. It wasn't long, but it was something we both looked forward to. And it helped to instill faith. Highly recommended. And then there's pillow prayers. I think that's especially good with teens. And that is where you will write out your prayers for your children and then leave it for them to read later and reflect upon, especially if the communication's a little strained. So let them know how you pray for them. So write it out and let them read how much you care about them and what your prayers are for them. I know of several cases where a teen was rebellious, kind of had stopped attending services, and the mom and dad both separately wrote out prayers for their restoration, and it touched them so that they came forward the next Sunday. We have to be creative, folks. We just can't go with the flow, or we're just going to be average, and the average family's a mess. So, there's a book called Let's Make a Memory, and it says, we have this moment to hold in our hand and to touch as it slips through our fingers like sand. Yesterday's gone, and tomorrow may never come, but we have this moment today. So carpe diem, seize the opportunity. May God bless each of you as you creatively raise your children in the nurture of the admonition of the Lord. Okay, it's 6 o'clock. We're out of time. But in your small groups, I would recommend you have a discussion about what your family traditions are. And maybe you can share them with other families, and they might find something they like that they want to do. So there's a whole page of questions to consider for creative parenting. And I hope you'll find an opportunity to process that information as you have opportunity. Okay, we're going to sing an invitation song in just a minute. But I'd like for you to think about this, particularly as we've been reflecting on names. 1 John 3 and verse 1 says, behold what manner of love the Father hath bestowed upon us, that we can become his children, children of God. And Jesus has this name, the song we just sang, says it's the sweetest name of all, and it's the sweetest sound, but it's only sweet for those who've recognized him and called upon his name. When Ananias was encouraging Saul of Tarsus to become a Christian, he says, arise and be baptized and wash away thy sins, calling on the name of the Lord. In that case, the name is referring to the authority of the Lord. And I think about Acts 4:12, that no other name in heaven or on earth can one be saved, save by the name of Jesus, because Jesus means what? The Savior. So my question is there somebody tonight that needs to call upon the name of the Lord? If so, this is your opportunity, is to gather, we stand, and we sing.
Thanks again for joining us today. If you have questions about anything you heard today or anything Bible-related, you can use the contact form on our website at teachingtruth.org to submit a question, and someone will be in touch. There's also lots of other great Bible content on our site as well. The web address again is teachingtruth.org. Once again, thanks for listening, and we hope to see you in person soon.